Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Alexander Audio. And today my guest is Jano Cohen, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in Philadelphia. And Jano, like myself, studied extensively with the late Marjorie Barstow, who was a very well-known Alexander Technique teacher who taught mostly, she taught in Lincoln, Nebraska, for many years and also did workshops around the world. And we're going to talk today a bit about her teaching, what we got from it, what might be useful for other people involved with the technique to know about, maybe a little bit about how her work compares and contrasts with other schools of Alexander teaching. Jano, welcome to the show today.
Oh, Robert, thanks very much for having me on this.
Well, it's good to have you on this program. I'm thinking that a nice way to begin might be for each of us, maybe starting with you, if you're okay with this, to just say a word or two about your initial impressions of Marge, how you came to study with her, just a little bit along those lines.
Sure. Well, I was studying Alexander Technique with Bruce and Martha Furtman, mm-hmm. and they brought her in to do a workshop in Philadelphia, and I had really been not studying all that long, and Marge was quite, it's kind of like a whirlwind. She put her hands on me, and I didn't know what had happened. I got so tall, and it was such a huge change that for 2 weeks, I went around trying to do what she had done and ended up with a terrible stiff neck, mm-hmm. because it was just so fantastic. I had to try to do what she was doing. And so I, from that and other experiences, I decided to train to become a teacher. But it was a very slow process because I was also getting a master's in dance and getting married and having children. And so it was, what would happen is I would go out to study with Marge in Nebraska or go to a workshop she was holding somewhere and just sort of gradually over time had experiences with her. It took 10 years to finish my own training. But she was sort of always part of, you know, what I was doing. Bruce and Martha were training us with the idea that we were learning to be teachers in the style of Marjorie Barstow.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, of course, that your first encounter with her was in a workshop, a group setting, obviously.
Yeah.
And right away, that is a bit of a distinction. I think it's still true today, that most Alexander Technique teachers work mostly one-on-one with students. And for the most part, until the very end of her life, Marge worked with groups, and often quite large groups.
And well, it's a different style of teaching. It's the amazing thing is when you're in a group with Marge, you're also in a private lesson, because mm-hmm. if she's teaching the group and she, you know, presents ideas that we're all working with, you know, for every moment of the day that we're with her. But at the same time, when she goes to put her hands on you, if you're doing an activity, then the lesson is all about you and what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's the same as in a private lesson. And so the lessons I got from Marge always felt like a performance of a private lesson.
Right. Yeah. Right. When she was working with you, it was similar in that way to a private lesson. But I assume that you noticed often you would learn quite a bit by just observing her working with other people.
Well, that's true.
She was very one aspect of her teaching was that although she would work with individuals in the group setting, she was always very aware of everything she did and said that might impact people in the group.
Well, and especially since Marge taught according to principle, she was always presenting, this wasn't body work. She wasn't doing something to us. She was teaching us a set of principles that we could use, a process that we could use, so that when we were witnessing other people working, we were understanding that we were learning to a process of awareness, and using a means whereby to change what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And this was always in her language and always in how she demonstrated with such simplicity that was no mistake, and that we were responsible for our own use throughout the workshop.
Yeah.
So that we were not sitting there just, you know, lazing around. We were at work.
Right.
And this was our work. You know, she was a facilitator, but that it was the work we were doing with ourselves that was our study.
Mm-hmm. And I think that element of putting responsibility on the student really right from the beginning is, again, something that distinguishes her work from the work of at least some other teachers. Certainly when I was training in England, I was halfway through a training course when I first came to Lincoln to take a winter workshop with her. And I was amazed that she would, in the way in which she would engage people who had never had any Alexander exposure before, because in the tradition that I was training in, there was kind of an unspoken assumption that you really, as a teacher, your job was to use your hands to help a student get a better level of coordination, and then maybe after a while you could start helping them with or teaching them some ways to direct themselves, but you wouldn't want to be doing that right away. Whereas Marge would pretty much jump in right away and ask people to start to think.
Well, when my first teacher was actually Catherine Wielopolska,
mm-hmm.
and she was a magnificent teacher in some ways. Her hands would just transform me.
Mm-hmm.
But I came to her because I had back pain. And so she would do a lot of table work with me, mostly, and a little bit of, you know, chair, not much else.
Mm-hmm.
And I would feel much better.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd go to a dance rehearsal, and my back pain would come all the way back.
Right.
As if I hadn't had a lesson. So it was wonderful work, this kinesthetic reorganization, but I couldn't make use of it. So for my learning style, that just didn't work. For some people, that does work. They learn with their bodies, but I need more. I need an analysis of the process. I need instruction, and I find that those teachers, some of the people work with this repetition, this kinesthetic experience. The mm-hmm. repetition of that is what they hold high, and they teach that way. And it's really a beautiful way of teaching, and I have experienced it from really great teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But it for me is insufficient. I need to be involved in a process that I can understand and I can use. And Marge was so clear with that, and all her teachers were. That was the astounding thing, that when I went to Lincoln, she would have like 14 teachers teaching with her. So she would teach the large group, and then we would break off into small groups, and each of the teachers would then work with us. And some of them used different language than Marge did. And it was just different. Everybody is different how they teach the Alexander technique. It's impossible not mm-hmm. for it to be so. And these teachers then would clarify for me in just a different way. But clearly she had transmitted the process she was using to instruct people to her teachers. So that made it clear to me also that it was a process to be learned rather than a particular teacher's hands that I was trying to encounter.
Or even a particular activity.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's something that just really struck me as when I first encountered Marge, because on our training course in England, which was a Walter Carrington style training course, the teachers on that course were all musicians, and they actually were kind of pioneers in what in England was called an application approach, where they would actually work with musicians playing musical instruments. And in the case of one of the teachers on the course, he was also a runner, and he worked a lot with runners. And I remember going out on, you know, in parks in London, and he would work with us running. But that was pretty pretty far out at that time. This was about over 30 years ago in England.
Oh, wow.
There was a lot of controversy about that. And
I
there
see.
Were a lot of teachers who felt, and I think the standard model of the day was, you come for lessons, you have chair work, you have table work. Depending on the particular school, you might get lunge work, or you get things like monkey and hands on back of chair. You get certain standard procedures. And the underlying assumption was that that would carry over into the rest of your life. And of course, to a certain extent, it does. But as Paul said, one of the directors of our course, who was a violinist as well as being a runner, and he said, you know, a lot of musicians, when he would talk to them about their Alexander experience, would say, oh, you mean I could actually apply this to my playing? You know, I mean, it wasn't, it kind of wasn't in the air back then that the assumption was it would carry over, but not that the person would consciously carry it over.
Right.
You know what I mean? And personally, when I saw how Marge worked, I thought, this makes a lot more sense to me and for my own way of wanting to teach the technique anyway.
Well, and I think there's with all the students that are out there, there's that many learning styles and needs. And so having some students I'll give them a lesson on standing and walking, and they'll apply it to their cello playing, where I hadn't even brought it up yet.
Yes.
You know, so it's really it really depends on the student. And I think Marge's approach fills in a lot of gaps for people who really, you know, didn't know that there was something else out there. And the other thing that what I find is that some people think about Alexander technique as something to do in stillness. I mean, especially when they hear that it's something about inhibition, that you're supposed to inhibit your habits. So then there's a bit of fear of moving. And what Marge did is she got people doing things and moving and showing them that they can inhibit in movement, which takes the fear away, you know, that you didn't have to just hold still and sort of be right, you know, and hold on to what she'd given you, or hold on to what your teacher told you, or whatever it was, because we're human beings and we're meant to move and we do things. And what we're trying to get back to is what children do at a very young age, which is that they go about their business without tension, and, you know, they're perfectly coordinated, and we just want to get back to that. So we don't want to just be still.
Yeah, I've mentioned this on a couple of other interviews, but, you know, with Marge, the way to get the most hands-on help from her was to be ready to do activities. When she, you know, she'd say, does anyone want to sing? You know,
especially singers. She loved working
with
singers.
She loved singers, yeah, and that's where I started singing country and western, because, and it was a way to get hands-on work. But the interesting thing is that when you looked at her classes, if you were just wandered in, or if you were an Alexander teacher and you wandered in but never worked with Marge before, you would have a hard time figuring out who was a teacher of many years' experience and who also had just walked in for the first time that day. But one way you maybe could tell would be that the Alexander teachers often couldn't imagine an activity than possibly teaching the Alexander technique as an activity.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course she would work with people with that, but that got into quite a different situation. You were really you had to expect some pretty tough teaching if you
were
going to do
that. Well, the thing is, you know, I was spared that because I wasn't a teacher.
Because you weren't a teacher,
I was a trainee. And, right. And the other thing is, I was a performer.
So you were a natural. You fit in perfectly, right?
In a way.
Yeah.
But I was a dancer.
Right.
And Marge had been a dancer when she was younger.
That's right.
And she was really frustrated with dancers. If we were stiff or anything, she just had no patience with us. She just thought, you should be doing better. And I always felt kind of humiliated because she just always, you know, and she would work with us real quickly and then just try to, you know, move on to the singers as much as possible.
Singers or musicians or people who just had ordinary activities like...
Oh, sure. Like vacuuming or whatever.
Anything. Vacuuming. Yeah. It didn't really matter. And that your reference to the stiffness and so on... Marge was definitely not into stiffening or holding positions, and I think among people who studied with her, who also had some exposure to other forms of Alexander teaching, in our more derogatory moments, we would refer to some other teachers as being Alexandroids, you know, sort of stiffly trying to be right. And of course, their take on us was we were all slouchers, you know. And of course, there's a bit of truth in both of those, but it does point to kind of to me a basic difference in what Marge was looking for and what maybe some more traditional teachers are looking for, in that she was not looking for anything approaching a right position. She was looking for ease of movement, basically. Yeah. And I think some teachers maybe have slipped into ideas about right and wrong kind of ideas about posture, maybe, and movement that Marge would not have been particularly interested in.
Right.
Do you agree with that from what you've seen, or how do you?
I think so. I didn't know Marge well because I was I just sort of observed her a lot more than really understanding what her point of view was as well. Mm-hmm. But I found that she really wanted, as we were talking earlier, about people being responsible for themselves and thinking. And for example, you know, one time she was working with me and she gave me a little ease up, as we used to call, a little quickie. And I started walking and she'd say, "Why are you pulling down?" And I was shocked. I didn't know. I said, "Well, I don't mean to be pulling down." But clearly she wanted us to keep thinking and keep working with ourselves. So, you know, and that was during walking. So it wasn't about holding a posture, certainly. It was about continuing to inhibit that pulling down habit. Mm-hmm, And I didn't have full control over that. That was just not a way I could learn, just decide to do that. I just needed more help than that. But that, so that I could tell that that's what was important to her, was that you continue your thinking, you continue improving, and you're not just being dependent on a teacher.
Right, right. And I think one thing that might be useful to briefly talk about was her utter dedication to the principles of the technique. I mean, I can't imagine anybody who read Alexander's books more often and more thoroughly than Marge, and in her case, particularly use of the self. I mean, it almost functioned as a kind of a Bible for her. And I'm sure you can remember. I mean, if you wanted for sure to get some help from her, if you got up and started reading from Use of the Self, she would just love that, you know. And she would talk about that book and about Alexander's writings a lot. And she would constantly say how important it was for Alexander students and teachers to read what he wrote and to really think about it. And not just to read it, but to read it and reread it and reread it over and over again.
Well, you may have heard that more because you were a teacher. I didn't hear that as much. But at the time that I went, Don Weed was giving a workshop on how to read Alexander's books. And so I think she imbued that with her teachers, and I got that impression that way. And the other thing is that what struck me as like miraculous was that she went all the way to England to study with F.M. Alexander because she read his book.
She read Constructive Conscious Control, I believe, in 1920. And her dance teacher lent her a copy of it, and
Which is just wild
she
to me.
just latched onto it and convinced her parents to send her and her sister over to England sometime in the 20s, mid-20s. And they spent 6 months there studying with Alexander. And actually, Marge had the first video, a first movie camera, first home movie camera in the state of Nebraska, and took it with her and filmed it. And there are shots of that trip that you can see on YouTube. If you go to her site, you can actually see a picture of Alexander hamming it up in front of
Oh,
Ashley
really?
Place. Yeah, it's all there. And I think it's interesting. I mean, Marge's own background, she studied physical education at the University of Nebraska. She wasn't born in Lincoln, but her family moved to Lincoln when she was 2. And in some ways, she was a very sheltered person. I mean, her family was very wealthy. They could afford to send her wherever she wanted to go. But in other ways, she was extraordinarily adventuresome. I mean, for a young woman in the early 20s to take a ship over to England with just her sister and spend 6 months there, I mean, that was kind of gutsy, don't you think?
I do.
And then when Alexander announced that he was going to start training teachers, she was the very first person to sign on. I remember Walter Carrington once telling me that with absolute amazement. He said, "Yes, the first person was Marjorie Barstow from Lincoln, Nebraska, like, the end of the world, signed on for his first training course." And gosh, is there anything else you want to say about Marge that would be of interest to Alexander students or Alexander teachers?
Well, I want to talk about her actual teaching
Sure.
because it's hard to talk about because it was a physical experience
Right.
more than anything. She just was, I consider her like a virtuoso.
Yeah.
Because she'd go through a room of 100 people and it would take her no time. Like they walk in the room and she already knew what their issues were. And as soon as she touched someone, they would transform.
yeah.
And early in my training, I just didn't know what she was doing, but I could see it, the change. And of course, the singers, oh, you could hear their singing improve, the violinists, everybody improved, and you could see they were physically different. But I wasn't a teacher yet, so I didn't quite know really what she was doing with her hands. And the other thing is that sometimes she would touch you and you didn't even know if she had touched you because it was so light, or you just kind of moved because the energy of her fingers were coming towards you and you were already moving. And it was like a miracle. And then the next time she touched you, it was like an iron claw, and all you felt was like your body was like a piece of armor that she was like wrenching apart. And it was like I would say, this can't be working. I don't feel myself even moving. And then she'd take her hands off, and I would be enormous or floating around the room like I didn't weigh anything. And it was just incredible that she had that. And she did this so quickly. I mean, you can get a lesson from an Alexander teacher and it can last 45 minutes and you feel absolutely magnificent when you leave. But Marge would sometimes touch you and 10 a second later, 10 seconds later, you were totally transformed. And I was like amazed over and over. And as she got older, she got more bent over. She looked kind of crooked. She had all that osteoporosis. And she kind of talked with this really gravelly voice. She was really getting older and older. And her hands got
Got
stronger.
yes, they
I was
did.
like, how is this possible? I mean, you want to model for your students your movement and everything. And she could just do, it was astounding. And so I was always so impressed. And one time, here's another example. We were having a group lesson, maybe not 100 of us this time, maybe there were 30. And we were in a room and we were all standing around in a circle and we've been doing some work. And somebody said, Marge, can you help me on the floor with something? So that person was on the floor and Marge bent over to help the person and she helped them get off the floor. And somebody said to her, Marge, how did you do that? I mean, she was so crippled looking. And she said, okay, well, why don't you all do it? So we stood around a circle, and she said, well, now just bend over and do a monkey. Now just do it lower, and then just stand up again. And she just, you know, and of course we didn't do it as well as she did. But it was clear that no matter how advanced her osteoporosis was, so she was directing with a great deal of will and clarity, and clear direction. And it was just amazing to witness.
Yeah, I think, and to put all this in a little bit of context, I met her in the originally in the late 70s. She was 80 years old when I met her, and she wasn't all that bent over at that point. That came maybe 7 or 8 years later, and I assume she was around that age when you met her, right?
She was upright. She was bolt upright.
Absolutely.
She was so youthful looking when I met her, and she walked very fast.
You saw her from behind on the street, you think 35-year-old woman.
I know, it's unbelievable. She was an athlete.
She was.
You know, and, you know, she rode horses. You know, she was, mm-hmm. like, very strong. No, that escalation into osteoporosis was rather rapid.
Yes, she just... Towards the end, I mean, when she got into her late 80s and early 90s, there was, I've seen x-rays of her neck that one of her students took in. I mean, there was very little bone mass there. It was
right.
It was but she, what I was going to say is, you know, when she trained with Alexander in the 30s, she was in her 30s herself, and she was someone who, I think, probably starting with reading Constructive Conscious Control in 1920 or 21, from that point on, my sense is that Alexander and his ideas were a part of her life every day to some extent or another. Now, she did have she helped run a family business at one point. She had other things going on in her life,
right.
But she really devoted herself to experimenting, using his ideas on herself, on her students. By the time I met her, which was late 70s, I guess it would be close to 50 years or more. And I think it's kind of a testimony to what can happen if you really pursue the basic principles of the technique for a long time. You do get, or at least she got, really, really good at it.
Yeah.
And in her case, her orientation was more towards working with groups and younger people and so on. But even if she had been a traditional teacher, I'm guessing people would have been blown away by her teaching. You know, just one-on-one kind of traditional private lessons.
Absolutely. Her skill was clearly there.
It was there.
And the other thing I want to say is that people who are masters of something put in an incredible amount of time to what they do. And that's something that was kind of lost in today's culture.
Yeah.
And my Tai Chi teacher's teacher, Qingmen Qing, was quite a master of Tai Chi. And somebody asked him, you know, well, how do you get good at this? He said, well, I practice Tai Chi 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
It says he lived Tai Chi, and that is what Marge did.
She did, yeah.
I used to watch her just, if you ate lunch with her, every moment was accounted for in her attention,
mm-hmm.
you know, which made it was very difficult to eat with her because then I felt humiliated with how I was eating. But she was very, very self-aware at every moment. And I once watched her go into a nap. She sat down in a chair and she slid down until she was in this sort of, not a slump, but a sort of a whole body slump where you're just sort of lying on a, you know, you're not sitting up on your sit bones. But
yeah.
And it was the most lengthened, beautiful posture. And she just slid down into that posture and went to sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she carried the thinking even into her sleeping. And I just thought, okay, this is the ultimate goal. You know, to really, you know, transform yourself at any chance you get, and you will develop that kind of skill.
I would agree with that. I mean, she really did devote herself. She saw something in Alexander's writing, and then, of course, then she met him, that to her just seemed much more important than almost anything else in her life. She, she closed her dance studio down. She used to say things like, "I feel so sorry for the people who learned dance from me before I studied the Alexander technique," you know. And she just really put her whole self into this process. And even though a lot of the time, particularly before the early 70s, she was working in much more mundane activities, as I say, helping run a family business. They owned grain elevators and ranches and that kind of stuff. And she had some other interests, but, you know, in the background was always the principles of that Alexander had discovered. And she herself would, she tended not to use the phrase Alexander technique all that much. I remember for the summer workshops, the little flyers would say something like, you know, "Come out to Nebraska to explore the discoveries of Mr. Alexander," or something
right.
like that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And then she would joke with people. She'd say, "Well, now when you go home and people ask you, you know, what did you learn in Nebraska?" She'd say, "Well, you could just tell them I learned a little bit of nothing out there."
And, yeah, or she'd say the conservation of energy.
Conservation of energy. Yeah, she loved that expression.
Yeah.
Conservation of energy as applied to human beings. And another phrase she used, which I've never heard anyone in the Alexander world use other than her, is she used to talk about the science of human movement. And she believed that someday there would be a real science of human movement based at least in part on Alexander's discoveries, that people would really understand human movement in ways that Alexander did, but they would be able to put it into more scientific language. And it's interesting that current research in neuroscience fits in beautifully with Alexander's ideas. I think
yeah.
Marge would love to have heard about some of the recent discoveries in neuroscience, and even the word inhibition seems to have snuck into neuroscience as being, you know, the really important aspect of thinking and moving. So
our gift to Marge.
Our gift from Marge. Anything else you want to say before we come to an end?
Sure. Just one more thing is that I think Marge could have just stayed on her ranch and practiced these principles for herself. But something in her, I don't know her history of this particularly, but she wanted to share this work.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly when people came out to study with her, she was just, there was such a huge amount of energy that she would put into her teaching. And, mm-hmm. you know, in her 90s, to be able to teach that many hours a day, she wanted to share the work. She wanted to help people. And she wasn't a marvelous verbal communicator. Like if people asked her questions, she would just give you these simple answers and it just wouldn't quite fit the bill. But she answered you with her work, her physical work,
mm-hmm.
and how she conducted her classes. And there was something very deeply caring about that
yes,
she wanted to
yes.
give it to people, and she wanted them to do better than they were doing with it. And the last time I worked with her, I was in a workshop in Washington, D.C., and I felt, she looked over at me. I was sitting there with Claudia Vess, and she said, "Oh, you two just look so beautiful sitting there." And I thought to myself, wow, here was somebody who used to seem like she looked with such a critical eye. And I always felt so humiliated with how I was doing, you know, that there was just something genuinely caring and appreciative in her teaching and her wanting to share the work. And that was a beautiful realization for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing about Marge that, I mean, not everyone who teaches the Alexander, in fact, most people who teach the Alexander technique today don't have a certain luxury that Marge had, which was that her family was extremely wealthy. I mean, right. her father had made, I'm sure, tens of millions of dollars or more in banking and all sorts of activities in Lincoln. And so for her, there was no financial pressure. And, you know, she could go to London for 3 years to study with Alexander. That was not going to be a financial issue. And for many, many years after she came back, she did study. She acted as Alexander's brother's assistant in Boston and New York for a number of years. But she, when World War II broke out, she moved back to Lincoln. And for many years, she really had very few students. Right. I mean, Lincoln was not, I mean, there weren't that many Alexander teachers in the world and not very many in America. And certainly, I think she once said that she was like 1,500 miles from the nearest Alexander teacher for many years. So, but she, when someone would show up, she would work with them. And her sort of fame, if you like, in the Alexander world really began partly by accident. She happened to teach at a couple of universities. She wasn't planning on doing group work, but they said, would you like to work with a group? And she, you know, in typical Marge fashion, she said to herself, well, I've never done that before, but I'll give it a shot. You know, that was her basic approach to life in general. And she didn't really become well known among most Alexander teachers until the early 70s, when she was in her 70s.
Wow.
So, you know, okay. Yeah. She was, there were a few people who knew about her earlier, but again, maybe in her 60s, but, you know, the 40s and 50s, I don't think, my guess is hardly anyone outside of a few people here in Lincoln knew anything about her. So it's an interesting career trajectory, which I don't think most people today can take.
No.
But I think to some extent that accounts for her ability to stay focused on the principal. She never had a hustle for students because there was no financial need to do that.
Right.
So anything else you want to say before we come to an end?
Just that it's so lovely to reminisce about Marge. You know, mm-hmm. It's so great to remember her and her lessons. Some of them are still with me.
Yeah.
And when you sent out the link to the DVDs, it was so great to see her teaching again. And I think we all, you know, we all love studying with her. And it's just a great gift that you've given us to be able to reminisce about her and share her with other people who didn't perhaps have the opportunity to work
right.
with her.
And in fact, just to put a little plug into a website that I created for her, MarjorieBarstow.com. And Marjorie is spelled MarjorieE. That you could, there are links, all of her videos are available on YouTube. And you can see her teaching in the early 80s, you can see her teaching in the mid 80s, and you can see her teaching around 1990. And of course, you'll see the osteoporosis kicking in by the end of that. But a lot of people have emailed and called me and said that just watching her teach, watching those videos, was pretty enlightening and helped them with their Alexander studies. So they're all there. They're available on YouTube. And check them out if what we've been talking about interests you. So I guess this will be a time to bring the conversation to an end. My guest has been Jan O. Cohen, who's an Alexander teacher in Philadelphia. We'll put a link to her website by the interview. And we've been talking today about the late Marjorie Barstow. She was born in 1899 in Ord, Nebraska, a small town west of Lincoln, and died in 1985. She was almost 86 years old when she died. And she was teaching until roughly a year or so up, before she died. Chano, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you. I love being able to contribute.